Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life, as we always are, and particularly every week on a Sunday with you. We're from Third Space, and this is a great honour and wonderful practice to be here again for our 290-somethingth week. I'm never the one who knows those numbers. Oh, 97. Justin's showing me 297 episodes under our belts. So we're here this week with a source from Justin. I wanted to mention that last week we brought a really wonderful source that had been attributed to Judi Dench, but actually is by a wonderful poet and author called Donna Ashworth. And there was a mistaken attribution somewhere along the line, and I got it from a place that was mistaken. So we've corrected that on our website. We wanted to let you know that that was the author, in fact, and not Judi Dench. I think Judi Dench has said lots of other wonderful things, because since we did that, lots of Judi Dench is popping around in my world. Lots of the things that she said. So maybe there's another source we could bring from Judi's and also from Donna, because I since then went down the alleyway of Donna Ashworth, and she writes some very beautiful things. So who knows, we might have another source each from Judi and from Donna. And just to say thank you to Donna Ashworth, if that ever transpires that she receives the thanks from us, because we didn't attribute it to her and we were actually speaking on the live broadcast last week. This source, Justin, is called What Listening Is For. And I have to say, as I read it, I could feel my world being moved and met and awakened. So I'm really glad that you brought this and feel really like chomping at the bit to get into the conversation with you. So thank you.
Thank you, Lizzie. Well, we should get into it. I just want to mention very briefly before we begin, Lizzie, our professional coaching course, because we just completed with the most wonderful group of people who did extraordinary, extraordinary things in their own development and then being of service to other people. And I'm feeling so enhopened about the world when people go out into the world with such great care for others. And I wanted to mention then this morning, I know many of them listen, and many of the people who are about to begin the next one listen too. And for all the people who haven't come across that extraordinary body of work that comes from Third Space, it felt very present in the field for me this morning that we were right on the cusp between the end of one and the beginning of another one. So it's really here with me. So for all of them, ending and beginning, thank you. We are very grateful for you and all you're up to in the world. And then this source. So I came across this book, Deviate, by Bo Lotto. It's very excellent. And as I was reading it a few months ago, this jumped out at me, and it's been in my long list of potential turning towards life sources, Lizzie, for a while. And it seemed like this was the time. So you can always, for all of you who are with us, you can always find the sources in our Facebook group, which everyone is welcome to join, in the notes to the podcasts, on our very lovely turningtowards.life website that's got all of the conversations, all the episodes previously there as well, and all the sources. And it's called What Listening is For. We project everything we perceive onto the world, including the world of others, their beauty, their emotions, their personalities, their hopes, and their fears. While what you perceive about another person is indeed in reference to your interactions with them, your perceptions still take place internally to you, though they arise from the space between you and them. This means that what you experience as their personality is, in a very literal sense, your personality transposed. Their fears are your fears transposed. Likewise, other people's perceptions of you are exactly the same. You too are created a as a function of them. You contain all the personalities, fears, and colours of the others you perceive. So what we need to teach our children and each other is the ability to just stop when listening, not only in conflict, but always, in order to listen differently. Listening is the diminishment of the answers we project onto the world.
Thank you, Justin. We project everything we perceive onto the world, including the world of others. Their beauty, their emotions, their personalities, their hopes, and their fears. While what you perceive about another person is indeed in reference to your interactions with them, your perceptions still take place internally to you, though they arise from the space between you and them. This means that what you experience as their personality is, in a very literal sense, your personality transposed. Their fears are your fears transposed. Likewise, other people's perceptions of you are exactly the same. You too are created as a function of them. You contain all the personalities, fears, and colours of the others you perceive. So what we need to teach our children and each other is the ability to just stop when listening, not only in conflict, but always, in order to listen differently. Listening is the diminishment of the answers we project onto the world.
So Bo Lotto goes on to say a lot more about listening, Lizzie, at this point in the book. It seems, as I read this, so obviously true and so confounding that so much of what I take to be you when I'm with you is me. Because for most of the time, the experience of you that I'm having is the way I know you is the way that the experience of you shows up in me, which means that my experience of you shows up in the midst of my entire personality in an ordinary, everyday way. And I've been, since reading this, I've been able to, it's been so extraordinarily helpful and really hard for me to really look at how, when I'm in difficulty with, like when I'm in a difficult situation with another person or in a group or something, to shift where I put my attention instead of all the things that are going on for those people and trying to understand them and like all the ways that they're wrong and all the ways that I'm right and all the things that are going on for them, to see that it's really, in so many ways, it's really me that's going on. Not that there isn't another person, not that there isn't an actual you, because that's not where this leads. And I think the really subtle thing here about that I love about this piece by Bo Lotto is it's not, Lizzie, when I'm experiencing you, that I've got filters like I get a transmission from you and there's some filter in the way, like having a yellow filter, which makes the world yellow, or red filter. No, it seems to me that what he's saying is that the whole way that the world appears for us, including other people, because it appears on the inside of us, it's totally mixed up, blended with, in the ordinary circumstance, blended with all the ways that we are. So I perceive the world as I am, not as it is, in a very profound way. And I perceive you as I am, not as you are, in a very profound way. So that in one sense is frightening, because it means one way that leads, which I don't think it has to lead this way, is, well, I can never know you I can only know me. As you show up, I'm just finding me. And I think that that's true, except there's also a way to really quiet ourselves so that all of the, what does Bo say? Personalities, fears, colors of ourselves soften. And we stop something. Something in us stops. So that what I'm doing is way, way less projecting me onto the world and receiving you. So I think in a way what Bo's saying is the ordinary, before we pay any attention to it, the ordinary way is that we're mostly what we're experiencing is us. It's mostly what we take to be everything else is just really me. In relationship to, obviously, but we really can attend so that we receive the other, and that's not the ordinary circumstance. We really have to pay attention to it, not just when we're in difficulty, but always. Because otherwise I'm living my whole life being in a deep and glad friendship with you, except it's not really you that I'm in friendship with. It's my image of you, my own. Anyway, I feel like I'm saying the same thing again, because it's like being in a hall of mirrors in a way. I suppose where I got left is feeling at once the truth of this, that we really do shape the world, including others, that shows up for us really is us, and it's not the only way. And we have to relearn how to encounter the world without us in the way. And we don't often get much of a chance or much encouragement to do that.
And so often, Justin, with these sources and with your speaking, I feel like they're totally like my support structures have disappeared or something. To really feel this and to let this kind of percolate in me is really undoing. And in this moment, you know, what's kind of undoing me is that you exist in me. And that's the main way that I'm here, is that you're inside my internal world. And then I get all discombobulated because I can feel and experience and sense the truth in that. But it also goes against so much of my way that I've learned what the world is that you're over there and I'm over here. But it's also the thing, Justin, I have to say that I do my best to practice in some ways for you to live in me as a kind of, it's a way that I soothe my catastrophizing part. That if anything ever happened to you, it's okay because you live in me. So when I'm nowhere near you and I'm in Spain and you're in England and haven't seen you for a while, I can close my eyes and Justin's here, like unequivocally here. So I know that about all of the people so far who've passed away in my life, that they haven't gone anywhere. And that's what's so discombobulating for me about death, is that apparently they've gone. But when I close my eyes, or even not close my eyes, but just sense and feel, of course, because that's what I was doing all the time, was they were existing in me as I met them and got to know them. They took up more residence in my internal space, more and more. I don't feel their goneness. And of course I do, because there's no way I can touch their body anymore. But that's if I'm kind of straight with myself, a much lesser experience than the internal experience that I have. My biggest experience is on the inside of me, because that's really the only place I can experience anything is in my, I can't experience anything from anywhere other than this body, as far as I've learned in my life. I mean, there might be a way that some people can transport themselves to different places or something, but that's never happened to me. My experience is within my senses and my imagination, and that exists in the sphere of my boundary. And so in some way, this is pointing to that part in my life that feels like I want to practice, because it means that I can be in touch with you wherever you are, and wherever that may be, it's not far from me. So I'm appreciating it pointing to that. But then there's also the kind of far more complex thing than, I mean, that's a complex thing in itself, but this whole thing of you are, your fears are my fears transposed. I can feel how undoing that is of the common narrative of you've got your stuff and I've got mine, and they're nothing to do with each other. And on one level, they are nothing to do with each other. And sometimes it's really helpful to know that. And then sometimes it's really clear that what's going on for you is something that I've buried, or something that I'm too frightened of facing, or something like, if particularly if it really triggers me, or I feel really activated by something you're frightened of, or something, some reaction you're having. It seems to me to be a very helpful way of looking at it, to see that you are in some way reflecting back to me what's going on with me. And I think, to me, the interesting thing is that the way that each of us is perceiving someone can be so radically different. You know, I don't know if you've ever had that experience where someone's really horrible to someone that you love, and you're literally like, how did you do that? Like, how could some, like, given what I perceive you as and where, how I hold you, the fact that this person just treated you that way is profoundly shocking to me. But it also proves to me that the way each of us is perceiving one another can be entirely different. So one person perceives you as a threat, and I perceive you as loving, kind, generous person. Like, how does that even happen? And of course, when I look at it like that, I can see that the person perceiving you as a threat has a very different perception of you. And this whole, we project everything we perceive onto the world. As I'm perceiving life itself, whatever my internal history, ancestry, learnings, traumas are, I'm putting them out there. And there is a way that I can go around the world, my world, with boxes ready, with perfect sized and shaped holes that you can just jump right into if that's what I decide is going to happen, in a way. And when I say decide, like, so much of that is not conscious, but I could have a perfect size space for you in me that justifies everything I perceive. And I can say, see, I knew Justin was that kind of person, and because I've already got that setup happening for you to walk straight into. So it's like I've got like a set of tripwires already. Like, I could listen that way. I could listen for all the ways you're going to hoodwink me. I could listen for all the ways that you're going to deceive me, or hurt me, or undermine me. I could listen for all the ways everything's got holes in it and can't be true. Or, like, if I look at the way I'm even listening to the world, there I could probably identify all my categories of what I think, what I perceive the world as. And so then when you say we can, that might happen anyway, but we also have capacity as humans to say, to acknowledge that and to stop and to listen differently, so that those answers that Beau Lotto is talking about are different than the ones we've got for all these years. And I feel like there's a way I can also get really bored of the boxes I've got. And I know that when I encounter people in this different way that you're suggesting, and those boxes don't exist anymore in that moment with a human being, it's really excellent and really discombobulating and really liberating that I can receive you in a very different way than my habitual set of boxes, which have been used for a long time. They're dusty, they're old, they're habitual, and that there are other ways to perceive and listen and feel into your world that have me actually receive you. It feels like newness or something. Like, it's where curiosity can be born. It's where, like, my God, I have no idea who Justin is. What am I gonna learn now? And I wonder, in this moment, what a different existence that is than my dusty old boxes being filled up with the things that they've already been filled up with for years. And then I can create a whole different room, maybe, that is probably another version of that in some way. I'm not sure I can cleanly perceive you or something, but something fresh, something new, something different feels really freedom creating in me.
Gosh, there's so much in everything you said, Lizzie, and I kind of feel like there's nothing else to say in a way, partly because there's so much to say. I could feel in me the very strongly my tiredness in all the places where I've got, like you said, a pre-existing place for someone, or maybe for everyone, that's shaped by my own personality and my own hopes and my fears. That people, you know, one way to go is that certain people show up in a certain way as an irritating person, or as a person to admire or love, or, you know, that constraint can be all kinds of shapes. And also the way it's possible to hold in us a shape for everyone. And people are irritating or out to get me, or better than me, or any bit of language not quite going to do justice to the phenomenon. You can also hold it for the whole world, to the whole of life, that the way we experience life is that we project our answers onto life itself. And if I let myself feel all the places I'm tired of the answers I project, all the places that I've got really certain, and how, you know, frankly, it's actually really just diminishing in me every person who I take to be an annoyance, and I'm listening for them to be an annoyance. It diminishes something in me very, very significant, which is the capacity to receive real life here. So the tiredness comes from, I think, in me, comes from that sense of how the world gets smaller. And like you said, maybe the way to say it is not that we may not be possible to ever open ourselves so wide that what I receive is you fully, Lizzie. I'm always receiving some impression of you in me, but there are certainly ways to widen ourselves in curiosity and openness and welcome and appreciation of what's here, and keep on dissolving our cognitive boundaries and all the places we're tight in our body. And, you know, there's really a lot we can do. And I was just remembering, there's a philosopher, wonderful and difficult philosopher, Lizzie, whose name is Emmanuel Levinas, who says that what we're talking about is the primary ethical responsibility of being a human. It's the first thing, the most important thing, is that you learn to receive the other, who is otherwise just a projection of ourselves. and until we can really reach, receive the being, the whole life that is the other person, we're doing a disservice to us and to everyone. So we better get on with it. We better not treat this as some, as Bo says, not some, you know, yeah, when I'm in conflict with you, maybe I could have some strategy to listen to you better. Not that, like, right as the primary ground thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking whilst you were talking, a good friend of mine introduced me to the work of an artist called Helen Frankenthaler, who paints very, very abstract, very, very big abstract paintings. And I did an experiment. I went to an art gallery here in London where there were an exhibition. She's no longer alive, an exhibition of her paintings. And it was not the kind of art that would normally I might just sort of walk by. But what I chose to do, because my friend Anna had told me how extraordinary this work was, I took one of the paintings. It was a huge one that occupied a whole wall, and it was in its own place in the gallery. And I spent a couple of hours just with it. So I got my back up against the wall and I let myself get really soft. And every time I wanted to move away because I thought, oh, I don't like this painting or something, No. My job is to receive. And the longer I stayed with this painting, the more it made itself known to me. And by the time I'd spent a couple of hours with this painting, it was a completely radically different thing. And it was a whole extraordinary world. It was a very abstract work, like had come forward. And I felt like inside me, somehow this painting had taken up, like you say, we can carry others, including those who are no longer alive, in us if we'll let ourselves, not just our image of them, but something deeper. That it was possible to, painting was a really good place to do it, because the painting didn't have any other agenda, didn't need to go anywhere, and didn't have a to-do list and didn't have plans. So it was just going to stay. And I could practice opening up the chambers in me to receive it. And now I feel like the painting lives in me as I talk to you, not in the way I'm sure that the artist intended it, whatever she intended, but in such a wider, richer, deeper way than my projections onto it had allowed. And it was a really good practice in doing exactly what you were saying, in softening the categories and softening the stories and softening the way, and that it works with a painting. Is I didn't have any stories about the painting being this or that kind of person or something with a history with me. It was just a painting. So anyway, it got me wondering whilst you were talking about, well, it got me thinking about the kind of softening that we can do with one another. And then the amazing thing about it is someone who's, I've really looked for all the ways you irritate me, turns out other aspects of them come forward. But even people we love, because as Bo is saying, what we love in other people might be mostly our own projection. We might be missing, and that might be wonderful, but we might be missing so much about the people that we love, and sort of taking for granted that we have them in us when what we have in us is us. So it seems to me it's an act of the deepest care to start to open ourselves to one another in exactly this way, which starts with what Bo calls listening, and I think is something, clearly, as you said, much more than just the way that sound goes into our ears or something. It's something very, very deep and very, very necessary.
You know, Justin, I've been thinking recently, and you just reminded me as you're speaking about what other people think of me is really, the way I've been saying it to myself, is really nothing to do with me. Like, it's not my business. It's not. It's not mine to have an influence over. And so as you're talking, I'm feeling the kind of futility of all of the image management stuff that we get up to as humans, that I get up to. Like, I want you to perceive me this way. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, oh, well, given, so you were saying about the artist and her intentions, in all likelihood, I don't know, maybe a bit of her intention got fulfilled with you sitting there for 2 hours, but probably you had your own experience, and she can't control your experience and your perception of her work. And she can't determine whether you receive the intention of it. That's not her business anymore. Once it goes on the wall and people are allowed to come and see it, that's her. Her work is done. It's not like she can control whether you get it or whether you get it in the right way that she wanted you to get it or something. And the fact that we are so mistaken that we can do that, like that I think I can control the way that you see me or perceive me, it's bonkers. And yet that is so much what the deal is around here in terms of us thinking, oh, well, I'm going to make sure that they think this of me by doing this. Or, but it's so mistaken, because I can't, like we're saying, I can't know you really in that way where I can do what it takes to make you like me or make you think certain things of me, because your perception and your projection into the world is something that's unfathomably monstrously huge by comparison to what I can really know about you. You know, we've said so many times, like, we could be with the same person for 50 years and still wake up and go, and probably even the longer we're together, the less we know each other in a way. And that mystery keeps being born. So any way that I'm trying to control the way that you see me, I'm just suddenly seeing as really deeply futile and mistaken and a massive distraction from life. I mean, there are like way, way wonderful things to be wondering about instead of doing something that can't be done anyway, because there's no way that I can make you see me the way that I want you to see me because of this, that we are essentially experiencing ourselves from the inside. And that's made up of whatever that's made up of. And if we really are in this practice of stopping to listen differently, already that is very, very different to managing what you think of me, or at least thinking I'm doing that. Because it's so futile, it seems like a real proper waste of life to be doing that. So I'm really appreciating this is like a literally like a whole different orientation. And thank goodness for philosophers like that one you mentioned, whose name I've just forgotten, Levinas, who think that that's the primary thing rather than the thing that you come to after years and years of panning around trying to make everything all right or something. Because it feels like if that was the foundational practice of opening and listening and wondering and not trying to be something that satisfies everybody else's perception, which you can't know or control anyway, feels very, very freedom-making, very creative. Like something can be born, something can happen here, rather than me wasting my energy on doing things that aren't doable. You know, I remember you telling me about a toddler you were with once, and they wanted to open a gate in the fence, but there wasn't a gate. It's like of those realms where it's like, this is not a solvable problem. This is not a doable thing. It just, if it was, I would help you, but no, there's actually no gate in the fence. And so therefore it won't open. And I understand you're upset about that, but it's just not something that can change. And that's what it feels like to me about this whole image management thing, because we're trying to control what other people perceive us as, and that is just not within our power.
And that is such a brilliant place for us to end. I so appreciate that. I'm going to be taking that into my life generally, Lizzie, which is, gosh, all the effort we're putting into opening a gate that isn't there and is never going to open because we're trying to control other people's experience of us. I hadn't imagined it. Of course, that's where this goes. Of course, that's the it's the next implication of what Bolotto is writing about. Maybe it's understandable that we do that when we're very small and we're reliant on big people to take care of us as we figure out we're going to reach into their inner worlds and somehow get something to happen. But for the rest of us, there are far better things for us to be doing with our energies and our creativity and our time.
Mm.
Thank you so much for always having such extraordinary, extraordinary things to say that awaken questions and challenges and deep wonder in me. It's a great joy to be in this conversation with you.
Likewise.
And thank you everyone who's with us for being with us. We will, all being well, be back same time next week. And I really want to encourage you, if you think that this or any of other of our conversations would be of value to other people, please share them. We're really keen that this is of use to people, is of value to people. So you're very welcome to point people towards the website or the podcast, or and you're very welcome to email us. hello@turningtowards.life is a great place to reach us. And we will stop here and be back again next week.
Bye, everyone.